Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Red Men Weekly podcast. I'm Steve Hoare, and I'm delighted to bring you some of the best clips from this week's Red Men Plus content. Like I always tell you guys, if you want to listen to these shows in full or indeed watch them in video form, redmenplus.com is the place to go. And we're currently running a special offer on subscriptions too. If you sign up as a yearly Captain subscriber, enter the code BREAK, B-R-E-A-K, in on the promo code application form, and you will get 50% off. That offer expires at midnight on Sunday the 15th, that's UK time as well. So yeah, use the code BREAK on a yearly Captain subscription and you get 50% off. Right, let's get underway. Our first clip this week is from the Final Word show. It's the flagship show here at the Red Men TV. This time, of course, it was in the aftermath of Brighton 2, Liverpool 2, and I was delighted to be joined by Dan Clubb and Steve Plunk to have a little look back at that draw at the Amex. Let's move on, because I want to speak about McAllister. I don't know if this is the right place, but we'll put it in here, Steve, because you mentioned at the top of the show, Liverpool bought a DM and don't play him. McAllister, the more I look, he's clearly a very good footballer. But the more you see him in big games, and Moscow, he's a six. I've got no issue with McAllister playing as a number six at home to Bournemouth. I've got no issue with McAllister playing at home against a lot of teams. Against some of the better teams in the league, which Brighton are. I don't think there are many tougher aways for Liverpool this season than Brighton, really. It's probably one of the top four or five difficult games Liverpool will play. It's Brighton away. I don't know, man. I just don't know if he's the man for that. And if Endo isn't, and Bacetic is injured, I don't know, man. But like, it feels like we're, I don't know, what's the word, like compounding an issue maybe. Is Endo crap? I don't know. Like, there's obviously a reason the manager's choosing McAllister in there, because he's even admitted himself he's not really a DM. I don't see him as that. He's doing a job for the team. But if it's not his natural game and he hasn't got those instincts, because it wasn't just this issue, there was a few issues with McAllister, he was miles off it.
Yeah, he was.
I don't know, it feels like an odd decision for the manager to keep picking him in there.
It does, and Belieber carries the ball 70 yards and screws a shot past the post and is not challenged by anybody, and it was like rolling back and watching the legs have gone for Bino and Hendo trying to keep up with all these young athletes, game in, game out. It would have been better. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, and it's dead easy to say it now. It might have worked and it might not, but it would have been, for me, it would have been Endo. It would have been McAllister on the left side of your midfield and Szoboszlai on the right, and you've got natural balance. We had no balance at all for the first 40 minutes. We were trying a tactic to bring Brighton onto us and try and release quick transition, but it wasn't working. Here's a side that were bereft of confidence to chip six against Villa. They'd good spirit from them to get back in midweek in Rome, and then they'd lost to Chelsea the week before, so they had one draw in three games, conceding nine goals, and we just sat off them and said, go on, growing confidence. I said to you when I came in before I went live, I can't understand the first 40 minutes from a tactical point of view. I couldn't see an identity or a game plan, and that's really, really not Liverpool-like, is it? McAllister's struggling at the moment, and I said to Dan, you know, bringing in Gravenberch and bringing in Szoboszlai are technically really good. They might be better footballers than him in terms of what we want to do. So he's going to have to change the way he plays a little bit, but he's not the deep line midfielder. I hasten to call it a six, because I don't think we play like that anymore. it's a deep line midfielder for me. But I don't think he's your man. He was static. He didn't even come to the ball for the goal. He was waiting for the ball to come to him. And that's the thing that Thiago does so well, is he comes onto a ball that's given to him and uses the ball to manipulate it, change direction. McAllister gave himself no chance by being static. I worry about him. I think he'll come good. I think if we get a proper, you know, Bacetic or Endo bedded in, I think he's behind Curtis Jones on that left side of midfield at the moment. Good job we didn't pay 90 million quid for him. We paid a very reasonable, respectable fee for him. He's got some work to do to establish himself in the first team, because it isn't working what they're doing with him at the moment. And as a result of that, I think he's gonna lose minutes when we get it settled.
What's harsh on him, Dan, is that he is taking one with the team. That's exactly what he's doing. But you've got to remember, like, he's a World Cup winner who's come to Liverpool, big pressure on his shoulders, whatever it is, you're moving to Liverpool. It's hard when you don't start well to then get that back. You know, that can be psychologically quite difficult. And I do feel for him in a way that he is doing a job, but he's not like that good at it, really, in certain situations. And it must be doing his head in. It must be effective. Even at the end, you know, De Zerbi gives him a round of applause to Brighton fans, which is nice, but you could tell he was like, it just wasn't right. I mean, his expressions and his manner suggest he knows he's struggling a bit. And like I say, it's not his fault he's doing it. He's doing what he's asked to do. Could he be doing it better? Maybe. But this is Jurgen Klopp's choice. Jurgen Klopp did sign Endo. He was apparently, by all accounts, him and Schmeichel went and got Endo. When, obviously, they missed out on Lauer. They didn't get Caicedo. They went and bought Endo. At what point does Endo play? Because if it's not big away games against tough teams, then what should DM doing?
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, he looks low in confidence to me, Alexis McAllister.
He does, yeah.
And for me, the mistake, his part in the goal and the error that was, yes, is something, but that doesn't even sort of bear talking about in terms of his all-round performance. The 45 minutes especially, I thought he was miles off it. I really do. Didn't look at the races at all, and that's twice we've been able to say that now this season. The Wolves first half as well, albeit there was caveats to that and the fact he was away in international duty and stuff, but he wasn't at it at all for me. And it's not of his making, obviously, but the problem is now, is that obviously in October, if we don't fancy Endo for these type of fixtures, and I take your point entirely, if you're not going to play him in this sort of game, when are we going to play him? I'm not quite sure. If we don't fancy him for this, Thiago, who knows if we do see him this side of Christmas, no idea. Stefan Pujetic, likewise, going to have to come back again and then get back up and running again. So really, Alexis McAllister, if he's thinking about it, he's probably thinking, I'm doing this until January at the earliest. I could maybe get a sort of a go in my favourite position after the transfer window in the middle of the season. That must be doing his head in, because he's been signed. He's got the 10 on his back in the simplistic of terms. He's got the number 10 and he's playing as the deepest midfielder. Doesn't make any sense. We signed this lad for all this sort of what he can do forward thinking in the final third. And again, giving number 10 to say, oh, do you know what? You're a little bit special. We really fancy you and your creativity and that. And then we say, oh, by the way, do you fancy playing behind the other two lads? It's nonsensical to me what we're doing. And we're doing him no favours by doing it either, because it's killing him. You can see it.
And the thing is, he is doing a job for the team, and I'm not saying he's a bad sign. I think he's a
good player.
He's a fantastic player. And listen, compared to the number six last year that we had, who couldn't move, he might be better. You know what I mean? Liverpool are better than they were last season, because Fabinho was stinky as well. But it just feels like, I don't know, this isn't a McAllister criticism. It's more of a going back to the summer situation. Staying, listen, it's Liverpool they've had a good start to the season. This isn't like, you know, we're not like pooing on them like we did last season when our heads fell off. This isn't that. This is just like little bits of criticism at times. It's more a case of, could a few different things be tweaked? And I don't know. Do you think if Endo plays instead of McAllister, Liverpool are better right now in bigger away games? Because that's the question. Because they're the only two options we've got at the moment of sixes. How would you just take McAllister out, whether he plays as an eight or out the team, and Endo's in? What you gain and what you lose, do you think?
Well, you gain somebody that sits in the pocket of space that your team's using to hurt us straight away. You gain by putting a player in there that thinks, first of all, what's the worst thing that can happen here when the ball turns over and the opposition have got it? So we'll take up a position where it's damage limitation, because that's what it has to be. You're also talking to a lad that gives the likes of Szoboszlai and whoever plays on that left-hand side license to go and roam a little bit. And if it breaks down quickly, either or can drop in and make a double pivot. At this moment in time, we're soft-centred. And this is Chris Page that used that a lot last season as a phrase, and it's right. We don't have midfield balance at the moment. We've got wonderful, wonderful footballers, technical footballers, you know, McAllister was bought because he sees a pass to break lines, forward thinking, as Dan quite rightly references. He wears the 10 on his back. And then we use him in a stopgap position, which is hurting him. It's hurting his confidence, hurting his ability. And you're right, he might get a go at it in January, but where would his confidence be in January to doing what he's doing at the moment? Because he's a lad who doesn't look like he's enjoying himself at the moment. So let's get a lad in there that does that and has been trained to do that, and that's his job, and that's the first thing he thinks about before anything else. It's common sense, you know, filling that gap, that pocket at the back of the midfield is causing us all manner of problems at the moment. And it's unfair to point the finger at McAllister because it's a stopgap, and it's a stopgap that's not working, spectacularly not working at times. Fill that in and then work around who plays left and right of him. I said last season, when I'd spoken a little bit in defence of Fabinho, if you've got a good six, it relies on the eights being good either side of you. Well, it's not really working for either of those at the moment because we don't really have a six. There's generally a big hole in there because his first thought isn't, we've lost the ball, I need to be in the action zone to make sure I'm the first guy that tries to win it back. And, you know, it's what we saw in the cup match in the second half. Endo shuts everything down. If you're saying now he can't do that in the Premier League, you have to ask the question why we bought him.
Thanks to Dan and for Steve for coming in for that one. Yeah, another up and down game for Liverpool. We'll see how that pans out at the end of the season. Was it a good point or wasn't it? We'll find out in due course, I guess. Moving on then, the Biased Football Podcast. This time, it's Paul, it's Chloe, and it's Dan, and yeah, the show where we have a little look around the league and see exactly what's going on elsewhere, including, of course, Arsenal beating Man City and tons more. Yeah, check out a clip from the Biased Football Podcast.
Man United 2, Brentford 1. So, there was a very brief moment throughout social media where everyone was just laughing their heads off at Manchester United. It's been a bit of an ongoing thing for a number of weeks, which has powered a lot of this show, which has been great. But ultimately, no, it turned into the Scott McTominay show for Man United, which they will feel like is a good thing, but I'm not convinced it is.
I'm with you wholeheartedly on that. I think this is peeping over the cracks to the extreme. We've been here before under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, just as it felt like the pressure was all getting on top of a Manchester United manager. They got a result out of nowhere, essentially, and it was all relieved. Oh, look, he's the best thing since sliced bread again. On we go. Rio Ferdinand slamming down contracts on different tables, left, right, and centre, and all's well with the world until in like 5-6 weeks' time, it'll be now because the international break and stuff, they're all going, hang on, I don't think he's very good anymore. And then they win, and on and on and on and on we go. But yeah, I do think this was just massively. Brentford aren't at it at all this season. Like, they're not what they were last term. And just to switch on to them for a minute, and they're very depleted, really, really depleted. And it showed late on in this game because they got themselves into the lead. I mean, the goal's comical in itself, like everyone's involvement. Like, we thought we were trying to sort of appoint blame to somebody earlier on, that this is horrendous. Like, so Maguire's at fault. I mean, Lindelof, Casemiro, and then Onana. I mean, what on earth is that? But what my point I'm trying to make is that Brentford, because they are so threadbare in terms of their squad, they just ran out of steam and they had nothing. They were clinging on for dear life by the end, and I think they even had to change the keeper early on because their number one keeper fell ill in the morning and stuff. So they just, yeah, I felt sorry for them a little bit. I watched the final 20 minutes because, like you said, everyone on social media, including myself, was just lapping it up, just loving every minute of it. So I thought, I've got to see the end of this. But unfortunately, do you know what? They had a sneaky suspicion when they brought McTominay on. This is not just sort of hindsight being a wonderful thing. I thought he scored a lot for Scotland recently. Like, you just never know, do you? And then obviously he does what he does, and credit to him for that, you know, on an individual basis, fair play. Like, but as I say, as a United point of view, I'm relatively happy because it means they're going to be sort of content with what's going on, and yet in 2 or 3 weeks time it'd be like, hang on, he's shit.
Chloe, you're nodding contentedly along.
I remember putting ha ha ha, that's unreal, because I just thought to myself, they're all sat there and look, celebrate a Brentford win. No. Celebrate a United win, that's perfectly fine. I can understand coming back so late on in the game. But also, I saw loads of people on Twitter being like, where's the, you know, Eric Ten Hag out people now? And I'm like, yous have literally just scraped through against Brentford at home, and yous were absolutely horrific, and it took a lad who doesn't start week in, week out to come off the bench and inspire that. He's not in your number, you know, your starting 11. And yet he came on and he was miles better than the rest of them. So I actually found it dead funny because, once again, even though I should probably be a bit upset that United have won, it felt to me like they were all going crazy. And I just thought to myself, watch when you just come up against a better side than Brentford. Like, Brentford had just, and he had chances to make it 2-0, 3-0, He never put the ball in the back of the net. That game should have been over and done with. And yeah, it, once again, it feels like paper over the cracks, which I'm perfectly fine with, because you now feel boss for the next 2 weeks of this international break. And hopefully you just get hit with a bit of reality the first game.
What smacks to me of, it's like when you go into pre-season games, you're really excited to see your new players or whatever. Yeah? And then a player you know is surplus to requirements scores the winning goal. And you're like, oh, well, I've learnt nothing about this, because I know it doesn't matter how good he is. He's not going to be part of this team. And I to your point there on Scott McTominay, is like, he's fine. I think he's an absolutely fine footballer. I think he's been a bit maligned by that club, but there was something too, because Maguire's heading, Maguire heads the cross, doesn't he? So it's Maguire with the assist and McTominay with getting the goal. And you're like, that's not your solution there. No. That is... That's a guy who is on his way out of the football club. Guys who are going to be on, if the manager had his way, they wouldn't be there those players anymore. So I agree. I think it's kind of nice. I don't want lads who are. I don't want Garnacho scoring the winner, because I think I'm told he's got a high ceiling. He's a young player. He's going to get better. It's better that it's almost someone like McTominay, because the thing is now, Chloe, there's going to be almost like an outcry to get him in the team when they come back for the international break. But there's a reason he's not in the team. He doesn't want him in the team. So that's another issue that he's going to have to face.
They brought on Eriksen, and I was like, what's he going to do? Someone's just going to skip past him. He's like, he's technically a brilliant footballer, sure, but it's past the time now. And Mason Mount played, and I was like, I was stunned at where Mason Mount is at this moment in time. He's fell off a cliff. I don't know. And also, he was playing out wide also, and I was like, what are you doing? Like, playing as an attacking eight, what is this, playing him out wide? Rashford's in a real slump, but you know what? The other way I looked at it was, right after the international break, they have Manchester City. So please, if you have any belief at all, right, now is the time for you to win a game in that fashion and believe that you can do something against Manchester City, because if they would have lost, they would have went into that game being cowards and thinking, right, lads, let's just hold on here. And that's not how you win against Manchester City. And Manchester United should have the bottle to go there and put some rough tackles in, make it unsettling. So actually it's helped me both ways in terms of it's papers over the cracks and you think the boss. And when they get battered 6-0 by Manchester City, I'll be howling. Or when they somehow win 2-1, I'll even also better. Be howling, because that's even better.
Yeah, all of that. Obviously they're going through something of an injury crisis. I mean, they better be, given the back four was Dalot, Maguire, Evans and Lindelof.
Evans was really good.
Yeah, I mean, like, he might be the second best defender. And look, and for a man who's 100 years old at this point, albeit still younger than me, he's more fit than Rafael Varane, who's meant to be absolutely amazing, but he's never fit. But Casemiro, again, as mentioned, he had a little resurgence the other week, and then he's gone back to being shit again, which is great. They've got Amrabat in there, so they obviously made up, they can put him in DM and all that kind of stuff. It's fine.
Didn't tell him.
Onana. Well, I saw a screenshot of Alisson conceding the goal at the weekend and saying, like, if this was Onana, there'd already be like a bunch of memes around. It's like, Alisson Becker's got credit in the bank.
Yeah, loads of it.
He can make mistakes because he's boss.
He saved us in the same game.
Yeah, genuinely. Dan, just briefly on the Brentford thing, they're missing Ivan Toney. It's one of them, having a 20-goal a season striker, papers over a lot of its cracks, over the cracks itself, and their caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. They couldn't sell him because he's not eligible to play, so they're going to go one of two ways, I feel, in January. They'll either get him back and he'll start scoring goals and that'll help them climb the table again, or they'll sell him and then they're left with that decision of how do you use that money? Can you get someone else in to replace those
goals? Yeah, I feel as though it might be the latter, to be honest with you. I feel like he is sort of already angling for a move away, if he hasn't been doing for the last 24 months, because every time he gets a chance to speak about Brentford, he's derogatory about them. So I think he'd much rather get the move away, to be honest with you. And there will be takers for him, I have absolutely no doubt about that. I've seen he come back the other day and scored for Brentford B in a behind closed doors friendly, so he's back up and running in terms terms of playing football again, at least. But yeah, the Brentford thing fascinated me. I expected a lot more. I watched them a week earlier against Everton, and they were miles off it, like just not at the races at all that day. And I was quite surprised because I really like Thomas Frank. I think he speaks well, and he's done a good job as a manager generally. But for, I mean, they are also injury hit as well, so that's not helping. And when the squad is as thin as theirs, perhaps that's having a very negative impact. But they're not in any sort of immediate danger of relegation, of course. They'll be well clear of that, I imagine. But it's not happening at the minute for them either.
Yeah. Moving on, Burnley Chelsea, another moment where, you know, Burnley are one up. Everyone's laughing their arse off of Chelsea. I had a bit of this on the radio, and it was telling that the way they talked about the game was Sterling is inevitable. You know, he had such a good game, and it feels like, Chloe, he's going to be the one who kind of carries them through until they get everything else up and running. You know, he's that. It's weird to talk about him because of the Liverpool connection. You feel like you've got his sage rubbish at all times, like. But at the peak of his powers, he's a world class footballer, I think, and he's there. He's been there. He's done at the highest level. He doesn't look like he's shying away from it. Actually, looks like he's quite bought into what Pochettino's doing. He gets his goal as well. He's all over the park for them. At some point, Chelsea, I think, are just going to start winning games. I don't think they're going to be a threat to the top end of the table, but this could be the early signs of Chelsea just gathering themselves a bit.
It's Burnley.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Was our Burnley crap? We'll come to that in due course.
Yeah, no, Burnley might be going down with the other teams that were promoted, believe it or not. But yeah, don't worry, lads. Our usual defo finishing Europa League spots come the end. Don't you worry to their fans who believed in that. It's Burnley. Great. Sterling is a good footballer. We all know that. I still think he's on the decline. He's not what he once was, which that happens. It's Burnley. He's played decent, but going to do it week in, week out against tougher sides and tougher opponents. And they also went 1-0 down. That's against the better side. It's not just 1-0. So I'll give them credit, yeah. You've got back on the horse, but also that is a team of footballers who I just stand there and I'm like, how much did they spend for him? Really? Who is that? I've never heard of him in my life. And at some point, he might get them gelling because he's a good coach. But also, on the other side, they look like a team who also, when they're like, you know, when the pressure's piled on, they just can't be arsed. Enzo Fernandez looks like a player who's like, I'm Enzo Fernandez, I'm the best at the team here. If they're getting tough, it's not me who's the problem.
Yeah, they're a weird one. And Chelsea, I guess, will know more. Pochettino's a good coach, isn't he? And yeah. But it's interesting, yeah. He started to do like the everything that needs time, you know, we all need to just be a little bit calm and just let me get on with my job. Yeah, fine. Burnley, Dan, for what it's worth, at 37% possession in that game at home. Now, I know we're talking about like Chelsea are meant to be superior opposition and they should be, and the players they got on the pitch, fine. But my contention, I've had this for a few weeks for Vincent Kompany, is what are Burnley meant to be? And I'm not expecting them to have 70% of the ball necessarily against Chelsea at home, but
that's what they talked up.
That's the idea.
That is, yeah, that's what it was.
This is the different Burnley, isn't it? Like we sort of referenced earlier on, like it's not particularly in previous incarnations of Burnley, Sean Dyche's Burnley. It was a tough place to go. We've experienced that ourselves and got last minute winners and had really difficult times at Turf Moor, especially. But now it doesn't look like it is that anymore because they're trying to get the ball down, they're trying to play a completely different way. You haven't got Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood elbowing everyone for a laugh. So it's a different proposition now and it's not working. And I often wonder when teams come up saying we're going to, and Norwich have been sort of the leaders in this particular party for a long time now, whereby you come up and say, oh no, we're going to stick to our principles, we're going to get the ball down and play free flowing football, and it's all going to be great and just watch what we do. And there have been some success stories of that, of course. Have Brighton are one of them, Brentford are another one. Brentford to a certain extent a little bit more direct when they've got Tony especially, but yeah, I take your point. They try
really
and play
good
football and
they
were
high pressing,
and they stick to what they do exactly. And Burnley have come up and they've got decent Championship players and they've gone, oh yeah, we're just going to carry on doing this, and it's not working. And how often teams have done that and then reverted to type quickly is fascinating. Now whether Burnley do that in terms of the manager is interesting, because they could easily pull the trigger on Kompany if it carries on the way it's going, because they've got, again, we spoke about a different club last week, I think with Bournemouth, they've got heavy investment there now, and there's Americans in there who want value for money and what they're getting, and they're not getting it right now. It looks like, to Chloe's point a moment ago, they could be heading straight back down at the first time of asking. I would contend that Bournemouth are very much in that conversation. We'll come on to them in a minute, but if they are sort of circling the drain, for want of a better expression, sort of Christmas time, and they are looking like they're going back down, Kompany's, oh, I'm going to play nice football, isn't going to last much longer.
You see, this confidence is a huge part of that, having the bravery to stick it out when it's all going wrong. When Liverpool have had some bad seasons, different levels to it, of course, but I think you're totally right on that. You see it happen time and time again in the Premier League, teams come up with these ideals, but they are incapable of judging the standards. So they come in, they're not prepared to play that brand of football, and then you're left with the decisions. You go back to your tried and tested. Normally it happens where clubs go, like West Brom upgraded this, and Stoke ended up doing it as well, where you get ideas above your station but you're still in the league, and that's normally when you cock it all up and you change your system. Burnley should probably just double down on it, but that, you're right, there's going to come a point where, I mean, if you're going to have 35, 37, 30% possession, then you're going to need to actually know how to defend and be pragmatic as well.
That's the thing, like you mentioned there, doing it in the Championship is a walk in the park. You come up against the likes of Bournemouth, and even, I mean, I don't want to put Luton in there and Sheffield United, but I am going to for this instance, even though they were down there. But you come and you face the likes of Palace, Bournemouth, Brentford, all of the bottom half teams, and fair play, Palace and Brentford can be top half. But you come up against those teams, even Everton, and your walk in the park that it was last season is not the same, because they know how Manchester City do it at the highest level here. We have teams who do it at the highest level, so these teams are already preparing for that, and you're nothing like them teams who are doing it at the top, so they know how to combat you. And I always reference Frank Lampard when he managed Everton, and he kept them up that season. He tried to play this lovely football with players who didn't have the ability because they weren't good enough. And he made the decision just at the one game soon enough that he saved himself, where he decided, fuck it, I'm putting 11 men behind the ball, and you know what, I'm keeping it simple, I do not care, I just need points. And at some point, Burnley have just got to be hard to beat. And doing this lovely passage of play isn't going to help you if you're shipping goals and if your players are too far up the pitch and you're getting countered. You need to build a foundation, and to do that you need to be hard to play and hard to score against.
This is it, you know, so it happened with Leeds, come up by, you know, by absolutely blitzing really the Championship, but it comes to the point in the Premier League, there's lots and lots of teams play passing football. There's lots of teams who are playing inverted fullbacks and all
Everton
these kind of things now.
Like Everton have done it really good this season, just haven't always had the end product.
Yeah, and but these guys have got players who've played in the Premier League before, or they've got one or two absolute gamers. And it goes down to, and this is a bit of my ignorance, absolutely, but we're going to come on to talk about West Ham and obviously Newcastle, and there's even Everton who we're doing next. I can pinpoint who the best players are in those teams. Everyone should be able to, and everyone in the Premier League who's going to finish in the first 12 positions in the league have probably got two match winners in their best 11. Burnley might have that, but that's almost the issue with what they've got. They've got this whole squad philosophy, but sometimes you need a lad who's just better than the other lad who's going to do more of the good thing.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Cheers to Paul and the gang for that one. Right there, next up, Journo Insight Time. I was delighted to be joined by Neil Jones, Liverpool extraordinaire journalist. Me and Neil had a big chat about Liverpool's midfield, Alexis McAllister, Endo, Andre, maybe all this kind of stuff. Yeah, what is the future for Liverpool's number six role? Well, yeah, let's have a listen to this. Let's talk again. I've named the title this because you wrote again on your Substack at the weekend. Obviously, the major talking about at the moment, if you kind of pick holes a little bit, is the midfield and in particular the number six area. You know, Alexis McAllister himself said the other day he probably didn't have his best game. That is the one, again, that's probably the main question mark that's come out of that game. It probably, it reared its head a little bit at Wolves as well when, again,
yeah,
different circumstances, Alexis had just flown across the world, but the fact that he got thrown in that situation, I suppose, that is the one, would you agree that's probably the biggest talking point so far? Is that number six role? Is it Alexis? Is it Endo? Is there someone else lined up? Because at the moment in time, it does feel like it's Alexis's role, and I think it's fair to say he's been a little bit up and down at times.
Yeah, I think he's been, I mean, I wrote today that he's been a six in terms of performance levels as well as position. So, you know, that six is not terrible. But I think, I think it feels a little bit like it's still being figured out by Liverpool. Not necessarily the personnel, but just the way it works. And I think it's so different, isn't it? You know, you couldn't really, if you were asking for chalk and cheese in terms of number sixes, I think Fabinho and Alexis McAllister are not far off that kind of, that comparison. So Liverpool have been so used to playing with Fabinho in that role and having certain things from him and being able to rely on certain attributes of his, even if he wasn't playing particularly well for periods last season. To go from that to having someone like Alexis McAllister, it's a big change. So it means that, the centre-backs maybe have to be a bit more comfortable wrapping balls in and playing those bounce passes, or they have to, you know, be a bit more aware of aerial duels and you know, Fabinho was obviously excellent in that regard. Maybe the sort of fullbacks can't be as high because the ball's being a bit shorter, there isn't maybe that range or vice versa. So I think there's still things that are being figured out. I think Sunday was one that, I mean, McAllister is culpable for the first goal, but he's by no means alone. I mean, you know, Van Dijk doesn't do him any favours. Alisson doesn't do many favours in terms of, you know, usually that just gets a, that's one of them where Alisson gathers that ball and everyone sort of says, calm down, like, you know, sorry about that, and you move on. I think maybe what's been the most, if you're picking holes in what way Liverpool look vulnerable, it's when they're being run at, and McAllister in particular is part of that. I think Trent's part of that. I think Joel Matip's part of that, where you're looking and saying, if someone gets, you know, Neto we saw obviously in the Wolves game, but you see Baleba and Adingra on Sunday, you know, we've seen a little bit of Bissouma and players like that, you know, recently in games where you think, oh, you know, if they get a little bit of a little bit of space to run, Liverpool still look a little bit too easy to get at. I think they've been a lot better in that regard. I do, especially when Curtis was playing and Szoboszlai, and I was a little bit surprised that it was not Gravenberch, it was Elliot on Sunday. So I think that's still something that needs to be worked out. I think it's definitely improved. And I had a look at McAllister's stats now, because I thought, you know, you can sort of, your eye test can tell you that, oh well, he's really sort of struggling to impose himself on games, and he's doing this. Actually, look, he's in the top 10 for passes per 90 minutes. He's in the top 10 for ball recoveries, interceptions. He actually made the most interceptions of anyone on the pitch on Sunday, including one in the build-up to Liverpool's equaliser. And I think this something else as well, blocks as well. Yeah, so he's doing his defensive work. He is getting through it, and he is capable of doing it. I think maybe there's just those one-on-one moments where you think a battle of strength, or you know, a little burst of acceleration, maybe he's a little bit too easy to beat. But I think we've seen enough from him, in my opinion, to see that he's a very smart player. He's a very adaptable player. He's a very diligent player, and I think he'll get better as he goes on. I'll be interested to see whether it continues in this role. I have a feeling it probably will, because I think if Wataru Endo was going to be sort of the man, I think he'd be it by now. I think Liverpool would have put him into the Premier League, you know, and said, right, this is how we're going to play. Curtis was suspended in this game, and he didn't. He didn't put Endo in. He took him off in the Union game on Thursday, and everyone thought he was going to start. He didn't. Yeah. He brought in Harvey Elliott, and he said it was because of the way he trained and the way he'd looked in recent weeks. So it suggests to me that we'll carry on seeing Alexis McAllister, although maybe not against Everton in the next game, because I think he's got another long away trip with Argentina. I think they play Peru on the early hours of Wednesday morning, so he's not back till the early hours of Thursday. So I think we might see an Endo or a bit of a change in the midfield for the next game.
I suppose, well, the Endo thing, it's to touch upon that, is that we saw this, it might be that, we saw with Fabinho, it took him till about this time to get in the team and get himself sorted, and he just kind of fudged it until at that point in time,
yeah.
Albeit with different players. Obviously Jordan was still about and helping with that role, it might be that. But also, like, the fact that he didn't play him at Wolves was probably, more so actually than Brighton, I actually think the Wolves on, where McAllister had just got off an aeroplane and was stating that, and was clearly done in, like, he just stayed away. And like I say, I think there are times where you want, you know, a ball playing six, for lack of a better word, at the times to do. When we saw the value of that, you know, his assist at home, was it West Ham to Darwin? Is the perfect example. But Liverpool, and they've got four games coming up. Again, we mentioned maybe the derby, and then games that they probably could do with that. But if you go away to a top side, and I actually think Brighton's one of the toughest games Liverpool will play. With Brighton away, that's where you might expect someone. If you're going to have a DM, like a defensive DM, That might be the time to pick him. Is this more than? I don't know if indictment's the right word. Is this more they don't quite fancy Endo, or do they just really want Alexis McAllister on the pitch?
I think I think more so the latter than the former. I think what's clear, and listen, we should point out, and hat tip to Michael Reid for this, Liverpool had more possession than Brighton, more XG. That's very rare for teams going to the Amex. So They clearly had a plan that they were going to be brave and they were going to play out. They weren't going to sort of... It felt to me, I don't know if it felt to you at the time, but it felt like they were a lot less gambly with their passes. You know, there was far fewer of those sort of reaches into the corners and sort of getting them turned. They felt like they were really determined to play through and be willing to do that. You know, even when they were under the pump at 1-0 down, and even when they were sort of hanging on a little bit in the second half, there was still a bravery for that. And Alexis McAllister is key to that. Obviously, he's a different type of player. Listen, Endo actually, I think, has done really well in the last two games I've seen him. You know, the first half against Union, the game against Leicester.
I thought he bossed that Spurs.
You're right. He came on and sort of had a real positive impact on the game, didn't he? When he came off, albeit in crazy circumstances, of course. But he isn't yet at that speed of, you know, listen, the two games he's done, it was Championship opposition and a Belgian sort of side in the Europa League. So it's a big step to do that against Brighton. I think the other thing as well, a little bit, is what we're talking about number sixes. I think there's been a little bit of a sign this season that number sixes are having to do a little bit more of that kind of thing. You know, you look at Tottenham's, for example, sort of improvement. It's a lot of that's based around not being a destroyer and not having sort of a Fabinho type player in there. It's actually built around players who are can take so brave on the ball. They'll take it into their feet and they'll turn and they can beat a press. You know, Basuma's been excellent at that. You obviously see Arsenal.
Declan Rice
is a bit of everything, really, isn't he? But he's obviously very capable of doing that. You've seen, obviously, you know, Manchester United struggling with that player in there, with Casemiro. I think he's been one of the players who's really struggled in their start of the season. So I think, yeah, Newcastle, of course, obviously, the other one I was thinking of was Bruno Guimaraes, you know, another player who's very much of that ilk in terms of, you know, on the ball midfield players. So I think maybe there is a little bit of a change in that sense, or a little bit of a trend towards that. And Brighton, great example of that. I think everyone come away from that with a little sort of mental note to keep an eye on Carlos Baleba and Simon Adingra, you know, two players that have been brought in, 19 and 21. They look like they're pretty good, don't they? I think in terms of Endo, yeah, it will take a little bit of time for him to settle. But I think you can say the same for McAllister. You know, I think we were all guilty of just assuming, oh, well, he's Premier League ready. He's straight out the oven and goes in and you just sort of, you get what you got at Brighton. They're a very specific side, Brighton. You know, they have a very specific way of playing. He's obviously playing a slightly different role to where he played there. But it still takes some adaptation to go from one Premier League club to another. And so maybe we need to give him a little bit of a leeway as well, rather than just saying, well, why isn't he at that immediate level? I think he's done fine, generally. You know, he's had a couple of difficult moments. He was unlucky in the Bournemouth game. He was hung out to dry a little bit in the Wolves game. He was punished for an error in the Brighton game, but I don't have any concerns about McAllister long term, personally.
Thanks, Daniil, for that one. Yeah, thanks you guys for checking that show out each and every week. Love Journal Insights. It really is one of our top shows. Hope everyone's enjoying it, those who are listening to it. Right then, let's move on. International break and all, this week we thought it was the best time to launch our mini-series about Liverpool youngster Ben Doak, where he came from, how he grew up through the system, and of course what the future entails for him. One of the clips, because Dan spoke to absolutely tons of people for this one, Dan's done a really good job of speaking to loads of his old coaches, the people who scout him, etc, etc. This clip I'm about to bring you is with Ayr United's chief academy scout. This is Raymond Patterson. He was a man who first spoke to Ben Doak. There's loads of stuff as well. You've got Billy Alexander, you've got Liam Anderson, loads and loads. Yeah, all about Ben Doak. Check out this little clip from that show.
Now, you were the head scout at Ayr United Academy, and I think I'm right in saying you're the man who unearthed Ben Doak. So tell us how you came across him, tell us how it happened, and tell us what your first thoughts were.
Yep. Got information about the Rye Boys Club. It's a small town just above North Ayrshire. And the team he was playing with was doing well. So we went up, you know how information goes about, and we seen the team playing, and they were very good. It was in an Astra pitch, a wee cage thing, you know, the cages they have. And Ben stuck out right away. He was the youngest in the team, and just scoring goals is for fun, you know. Hard to pin down. Had to knock off the ball, and I thought, well, there's something here. And I think I did move the first time. I can't remember now, but I maybe went back again, seen him again. I think I possibly did, and it was excellent again. So I made the approach to Evan Ferns, who was a manager, and done a great job with that team. He said, no problem. We'll get him in. He's that a bit younger. We couldn't sign him at that time. We didn't have a policy to sign players at that younger age group. Ben was 9, I think. But you couldn't take your eyes off him for his kick him up and down the park, as they say, and he bounced back.
You came across him when he was very young, obviously. What were your first impressions of Ben? When did you first see him and what did you notice?
So we saw him, we were taking under 10s at the time, and he was playing up a year. But Ben, he was just a special talent. He would light up the game. He was just this fiery attacking player. I loved taking players on with speed and his skills. And he would score lots and lots of goals at that age. Also provided a lot as well. And we just knew he had something. And it was really good. So we used him. We had him at under 10s. And then we had him for a short period at under 11s before Celtic came in and got him. But he was a special talent. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned sort of how you used him there and his goal scoring prowess and the fact he was assisting as well. Was he always just an attacker then? Was that what he wanted to be? He wanted to get the ball and make things happen. I mean, most kids want to be an attacker, I guess, don't they? Nobody grows up wanting to be Gary Neville, to use that old quote. But was he always get me on the ball, let me run at defenders and just let me just score goals, basically?
Yeah, he was full of confidence and he was just he was such good with skills and technique and ability. He was one of those special talents. You don't get many of them, but he had it all.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You obviously seen a lot of youngsters come through the academy and some make it, some not make it, obviously. Could you tell with Ben straight away that he was a little bit different? There was something special there. You've mentioned his talent. Was he unique? Could you tell straight away that if this kid doesn't make it, God help the rest of him, basically?
Oh, definitely. He's head and shoulders above everybody else. He was hungry and he was always wanting to learn. His behaviour at training was really, really good. And he just had it. Even his technique, his ability, he was just so good on the ball. And yeah, always willing to learn. He's a great player. But yeah, we have saw a few for United as now. We've had under-11s breaking into first team. But Ben, yeah, he's just such a special talent.
When could you tell you what, this kid's a little bit special?
Pretty much straight away, to be honest. When I joined the academy, Ben was with the under-11s and he was a year younger than everyone else, so all the boys were 10 and he was 9 years old, and he was smaller than everyone else, but he was so powerful and so raw. You know, it was like almost comparing to a young Wayne Rooney, but just so, again, so raw, so powerful, rushing the ball, but had a real eye for goal as well. And even going against older players and training and games, you would never think he was younger, you know, like he had a kind of older aura about him when he was playing. So as your question, pretty much straight away, you could tell this kid has something for sure.
Cheers to Dan for that one. Like I say, that two-part series is available on redmenplus.com right now. Really is a special one. Go and check it out. I do urge you. Ben Doak looks destined for greatness at Liverpool, and if he is, well, yeah, you'll want to know his origin story. Right then, let's move on. Again, international break. Loads of free time, I was going to say, but loads of time to reflect on what's happened so far. So we introduced our latest show. This was Reds Roulette. Effectively, what we did, we put all of the players who played for Liverpool this season onto a wheel. We spun it, and whoever it landed on, we had a chat about their season so far. It was me, it was Dan, it was Chloe, and the wheel, as it so happens, landed on the Egyptian king, Mohamed Salah. Okay, let's move on to our second player.
Be kind.
Oh, not again.
Be kind.
How can it not be kind? They're all good players.
Oh,
this one's easy.
Hello.
Let's talk then about the king of Egypt, Mohamed Salah. Chloe's just done it again. Like, for all the talk in the summer of Mohamed Salah, is he even going to be here? Has his head gone? Is he miserable? Does he? Blah blah blah. He is a goal machine and an assist machine, and he has just been, like I say, he might not be the same player as he was 3 or 4 years ago in terms of impact on the game, as like constant giving the ball, he'll run at players, whatever, but my God, Mohamed Salah knows how to pass a ball and how to finish a ball, and he's just showing it again already.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, the levels of Mo Salah. There's a certain lad who's retired at his age already, and I've got Mo Salah still tearing it up in the league. Bear in mind, I think aside from Erling Haaland, who's just a machine, Mo Salah is potentially the best player in the Premier League. He's just absolutely outrageous. And you all knew, you had glimpses of him with unbelievable assists. But this season, I mean, first of all, we all thought he'd decided to make a new role of himself and become the provider for everyone, but it's just his vision and the fact that his technique and his way to pass has just improved so much.
He's a joke.
He's ridiculous. He's unstoppable, and even in games where you don't see him, he'll pop up with a goal still, or he'll do something to influence the game. He's back on pens as well, and he seems to be slotting them so far. I'll touch my head just in case that stops. But yeah, he's just lethal. I don't have any. I think we've gone through the superlatives of what we can explain and describe Mo Salah with. He is just world class, one of the best in the world. We're extremely lucky to have him, and I hope to God this isn't the last season of him, because if he can replicate this level again next year, you're missing an unbelievable footballer.
He's got 10 appearances in all comps, 6 goals, 4 assists, so even I can work that out. It's a goal contribution every single game. He scored 5 in the league, obviously, and 1 in Europe. He's got the 4 assists in the league. Dan, if someone sat here and said to me, Mo Salah's the best player in the world, argue against me right now. There aren't that many arguments. You can name other players who are having really good, and even in the Premier League, there's lads having really good seasons. But he is, like, Chloe's right, he's in his 30s. It isn't the same player as what he was, but he's doing it differently. And his impact on the game, like I say, is still huge. Teams are terrified of him. He's got everything. He's just a killer as well. You mentioned about Jota earlier. Like, he might be the best player in the league now. He might be the best player in the world now. He might not be, and there's other names you can throw out there who are having really good seasons, of course. But there's no drop off in Mo Salah. He's still in that level of football that has, even in the, you know, his early 30s now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you could add another assist to that tally if you want for the Diaz one. If we're going to be dead honest about it. And there's a couple more. I was thinking through some of his performances there and the goals and the assists. There's a couple more passes. There's another one to Diaz, which he probably should reach. And he doesn't quite get it. His passing and what he's offering in that aspect now is something we haven't seen loads of. Like, he's always got decent numbers when it comes to assists, but they were often sort of laying it on a plate for Sadio Mane or Bobby Firmino, whoever it may be. But now we are seeing a slightly different Mohamed Salah, with still chipping in with his own outstanding goal contributions in terms of scoring himself, because it's interesting the way he's playing, because it's almost like we've all spoken about how well he's linking up with Darwin Nunez, and he does appear to be just slightly deeper when Nunez plays, because Nunez is often the man running behind. He's got, I mean, twice against Newcastle was Salah through to Nunez, so that's a new thing. That's like almost like a 10 Mohamed Salah, whereas when it is Gakpo and Jota, it's slightly different, and Salah's allowed to be old Mohamed Salah a little bit more and running at people and that type of stuff. But Chloe summed it up perfectly there. Like, he is outrageously good. Like, we are still so lucky to have him, and we should never take him for granted. We always give Nunez his flowers and Sobers lie this season especially, but Mohamed Salah still do Mohamed Salah's things. Like, he's just, this is his world. We're all just living in it at times. Like, we really shouldn't just underestimate the fact that he turns up in games, gets his two goals, goes about his business quietly, and then we all move on. Like, he is ridiculous. Like, the other day, I don't think he was great the other day, and he scored twice. You know what I mean? It's mad.
It's also his work ethic, his determination, his desire. I mean, I've not seen a person more in shape in my life. He doesn't seem like he stops. He cares so much about his body to be able to play at the highest level. And I've been shocked with Szoboszlai in terms of, I don't think I've seen anyone press like him. Like, Salah was the only other player who I thought could be fitter than him, in terms of how they can just carry on going. And Mo Salah just is relentless. That's the only way.
Yeah, he is.
He's obsessed with being the best. And that is the best part of him. It's that no matter, he could score a hat-trick, but if he missed the fourth chance, he'd be fuming on himself. And he'd want to go and prove it right. And that's the thing. To be on the level that Mo Salah is, you have to be obsessed with wanting to be the best. You have to be obsessed with putting the right food in your body, training the right way, recovering the right way. And he is. He's just all of that. He's everything that is perfect in a player and that you want in a footballer.
We've got a couple of Discord comments. Ashley says he's an assist and goal machine, and he's also taking on a leadership role even without an armband. Yeah, which is fair enough. Yeah. Quad pod, Salah starts in every team in the world, and that's the only way to think about him. Yeah. Like, there is a genuine case to make, Danny. He might be the best player in the world. Like, he might. I thought this. What season was it? It was the season when we had the Ekru came in and he just scores that. He scores the hat-trick at Old Trafford. Yeah. I was thinking, at that moment in time, I think he was the best player on the planet.
He was, yeah.
I think he was. There's a world now where he might. I don't know who else is there. Like, really, like, Haaland is different. He's a killer. He's unbelievable. Don't get me wrong. They're not bad players. There's really great players.
Vinicius Junior's a brilliant winger.
Yeah, Jude Bellingham might want to have a conversation.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it because it's
incomplete. No, right.
I think you're right. Listen, overall, I think you're right. Mohamed Salah and what he's doing right now, you can't bring your Messi's into the equation anymore because of where. And listen, best I've ever seen, like, you know what I mean, but because of what he's doing and where he's doing it, he's not quite the same now. Ronaldo likewise, it might well be Mohamed Salah. We might have to have a big old conversation because Haaland, albeit freakish, albeit robotic, hasn't had the start of the season he probably would have wanted. And there's a few
seven goals,
yeah, of course,
no, he's a joke, of course,
there's a few in the same boat, yeah. But for what Mohamed Salah's doing now, the development and sort of the transformation in his game, he may well be in that conversation once more, and I'd happily have it with anybody. But I think if you ask the last defence who's the best player in the world, they'd probably say Mohamed Salah, because that cameo in Austria was a farce. Like, he came on and literally went, do I need to be here? Like, and he just ran.
I said it was like in school when the year 11s joined in with the year 7s, and he was like, I'm just running around rings around you.
Farted. Like, they're also professional footballers playing in the Europa League, and you never would have guessed. No. It was a joke, that it really was. Like, he must have felt, I was like, really, you need me? Go on then. And that was levels, mate. That was proper levels, that.
And so when the Salah conversation with you closed, that there was serious question marks about his future. We didn't know on the after our deadline day, that Saudi, they were still talking that he's going to Saudi Arabia. Someone bid, you know, a record bid for the fella. Like, it could have happened. I don't know whether he wants, we don't know if he wants to go, did he want us to? We'll never know that until down the line, someone, you know, it'll come out in time. He's showing no effects of that. Like, it doesn't look like he isn't like a lad who's sulking or who's got a cob on per se. He's just like, even during all that time, he was just scoring goals, assists, goals, assists, goals, assists. And we haven't seen no drop-off, which, like you say, there's almost like an assumption that this is just the last year of Mo Salah. Like, everyone's just agreed to it. It would be mad to, like, I'd be having contract talks now, like, straight away. I'm like, this is your level now. You can do this till you're 37. There's no reason why we can't. Everyone's looking past Mo Salah. He could be here for five more years if he wants to be. Like, the conversation will become, it'll come up again in January, it'll come up in the summer, but I mean, no one's going to be unhappy if Salah, surely we all want him to sign this contract. No, at the start of the season, it was like, oh, well, you know, just keep him this year and we'll sell him and everyone will shake hands. I was like, don't want to lose this. What can you do to replace this? This is unreal.
Yeah, it's, I can't even explain how important he's been to Liverpool and to winning trophies under the Jurgen Klopp era. And it's just like, I've seen some unbelievable footballers play at Anfield in my life, and he is up there with the best. And the fact that he, any distraction, he just takes away from it. He doesn't think about it. He doesn't speak about it. He always says the right things. You know, when he's being questioned on it, it's like, no, I'm at Liverpool and I'm happy to be here. And I hope he doesn't leave next season, because he's irreplaceable. Yeah. He just is irreplaceable. And I don't care what anyone says. No amount of money is going to find you the next Mo Salah, because I don't think there is one at this moment in time. It's very slim pickings for right wingers out there, especially ones that can do what he does. I mean, you think about it, we've had to stick him up top when we've gone down to, you know, 10-9 men this season.
He's played the front of it,
and he's been incredible up there as well. He's versatile, his work rate, his work ethic, there's just, he's just perfect. He's an unbelievable footballer.
Season out of 10?
9 for me.
Yeah.
Cool. Cheers to Chloe and Dan for that one. Yeah, hopefully you enjoyed that and all those amazing clips that we've just brought you. Like I say, if you want to check out them all in full in podcast or video form, redmenplus.com is the place to go. And don't forget to use that code BREAK on a yearly captain subscription. Get yourselves 50% off. If you sign up now, you get it for an entire year. So what? You get the rest of this amazing season, both transfer windows and the start of next year as well. So yeah, what? No better time to get yourselves involved. Entertain yourselves over the international break while the Reds are away. And then when they are back, we've got you covered with pretty much two games a week, each and every week. So tons of content. Honestly, it's hours and hours. You won't regret it. So yeah, redmenplus.com. Sign up. Use that promo code BREAK as a yearly captain and get yourselves 50% off. In the meantime, I hope you have a wonderful weekend, whatever you get up to. We'll be back with another Red Men Weekly podcast next Friday. See you all then.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing, so we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at byheart.com.